Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the Who Can It Be Now edition, as Dave Lapham joins me for one of the most downloaded episodes of this podcast every year, featuring our final pre-draft discussion and Lap's prediction for who the Bengals will select at number 18. The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By Alta Fiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. Now, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since the four foundations of golf. I've been playing golf for most of my life and would describe my game as decent but frustrating. I hit the ball pretty solidly, but rarely post great scores. Well, I'm about halfway through a book called The Four Foundations of Golf, and it's already helped simply by changing my strategy. I haven't read a single word about the swing, at least not yet, but I'm confident I'll be able to take a few strokes off my typical scores by using a smarter approach driven by easy-to-understand data. So, if you love the game, but hate to suck at it, pick up the book, The Four Foundations of Golf. I found it at the library, and I'm ready to go low. Now, let's get to football. My broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, has been remarkably accurate over the years in predicting who the Bengals would select with their first-round draft pick. In 2012, when many experts said it would be offensive lineman David DeCastro, Lapp correctly said it would be another O-lineman, Kevin Zeitler. In 2013, despite already having two-time Pro Bowl tight end Jermaine Gresham on the roster, Lapp correctly predicted that the Bengals would select Tyler Eifert. He nailed the John Ross pick in 2017 when the Bengals already had A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd, and there have been other years where even if he didn't get his final prediction right, it was because that player was already gone, and Lapp told us who they would likely take if that happened. So, it's time for this year's pre-draft extravaganza, featuring an in-depth discussion of this year's class, our first-round predictions, and your Ask Lapp questions. We are now joined by the 61st pick in the 1974 NFL Draft, Syracuse offensive lineman Dave Lapham. That draft took place in January. Back then, 17 rounds. There were seven Hall of Famers. Five of them went to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Unbelievable.
I was looking at the Pro Football Reference database. They have a system that measures everybody's approximate value. You were tied for 18th. In the 1974 draft class, for most overall career value, actually ahead of Hall of Fame tight end Dave Casper.
Wow.
So congratulations on that. Is it a point of pride, though, to have been part of a draft class that generated so many great players?
It really, really was. And, you know, get to be friends with Mike Webster in particular. And Dave Casper is another one. We played in quite a few of the All-Star games, and I was fortunate enough, back then the Hula Bowl and Senior Bowl had been on the same weekend. That year, for the first time, it wasn't. So I made the circuit. I went blue gray, east west, Hula Bowl, Senior Bowl. I was out of the queues for 6 weeks, man. It was unbelievable, and we swept them, won all four of them. So it was a great All Star game run, and made friends with a lot of really good guys, Webster being one of them, Casper another, and, worked out against it at practices and or games against guys, including Tutal Jones, who was the first pick of the draft. And I remember pass protected against him, and all of a sudden the circle of people got closer and it got bigger. And you see owners, you know, back then it was owners and general managers, and because it was just a 16-millimeter film is what everybody would get. There were no cell phones. It wasn't anything like that. So it was like, I hope this rep goes well. This could have a lot riding on it right here. It was an interesting time, but a fun time.
The then Houston Oilers had the number one overall pick in that draft. They traded it to the Cowboys along with the first pick in the third round for a couple of vets. Dallas got Tutal Jones, as you mentioned, the number one overall pick, and the first quarterback taken in your draft, Danny White, who was their starter for like 10 years or something like that. That's why Dallas was so good for so long. They often swindled teams in the draft.
They really did. I mean, they took it was a science to them long before it was a science to everybody else. They were more than a step ahead of everybody. They were, I think, a good jog ahead of everybody back in the day. I mean, Gil Brandt was way ahead of his time. He was lapping people, you know. And that guy, I can remember vividly, at every All-Star game, he was there. It was him, you know, making contact with people, looking you right in the eye, shaking your hand. I'm Gil Brandt, Dallas Cowboys. We think this or that, and just give you really good information that other people weren't even thinking about talking about. He was way ahead of his time.
All right, let's turn to this year's draft. Every draft guru says it is a historically good group for offensive linemen. Why? What is it about this class that jumps out on tape?
Boy, at the offensive tackle position, it's just, they're behemoths. I mean, it is unbelievable. If you're not 6'6 to 6'8, 325 pounds to 350 pounds, you ain't making the club, you know. And everybody's hand is, you know, from the tip of the pinky to the tip of the thumb, 11 plus inches, almost a ruler. You know, they can almost palm a ruler, and their wingspan from, you know, fingertip to fingertip when you put your hands out to the side, it's over 7 feet. You know, 7 feet, 7'2". So it's their arms are 35, 36 plus inches. They are big, long, strong, athletic enough to, you know, they're bending at the knees, not at the waist. Their hand placement with those big muckers and the strength in their hands is phenomenal. I mean, I watch some of these guys just control people with their hands. It's incredible to watch the strength that they have, and they can move. I mean, some of them have a little bit more problem redirecting inside than others, but almost all of them handle the outside stuff, you know, very fluidly. So it's a group where, you know, there are, I think, 6 or 7 offensive tackles that could be drafted in the first round, and they're all worthy. And that's the thing I think that's impressive about this draft overall, Dan. I mean, there have been drafts here recently where we're saying that's not even 16 first round picks, not even half the draft, maybe 20, you know, in another draft. Now this, I think this draft is like, there'll be guys that go in the second round where you could make a case, you know, really that guy could be he's a first round talent, you know. Now this draft, they're able to fill up the first round. And I think overall, in a lot of rounds, there's quite a bit of depth. I mean, it's a really good draft, and there's good players, and there's depth of player in most rounds.
I looked at numerous draft experts' big boards to see how they rank these offensive linemen. And there's a website out there that looks at hundreds of big boards and thousands of mock drafts to compile a consensus. Here is the consensus ranking of the top offensive linemen. Joe Alt, Notre Dame, number one.
Yep.
Olufashinu, Penn State, number two. Talisa Fuaga, Oregon State, number three. Troy Fautanu, Washington, number four. J.C. Latham, Alabama, number five. Amarius Mims, Georgia, number six. At least one of those guys is going to be there at number 18. And who knows if 5 or 6 quarterbacks get taken before the Bengals are on the clock. Maybe 2 or 3 of those guys are available. Who's Dave Lapham's dream offensive lineman? And of those 6 guys, are there any red flags?
I think that, in my mind, I've kind of liked J.C. Latham for a while. And I saw where, oh, boy, you know, he's not going to be there. And then, oh, man, he is going to be there. You know, it's the mock drafts will just kind of guys move up, move down a little bit based on whatever. But I watch that guy, and he seems to just cover people up. And he is he's a beast in the running game. He's a very, very solid pass protector. I did a podcast with Orlando Brown a bit ago, and that's who he had targeted, like, early on. He felt like J.C. Latham was a plug-and-play guy. I had the same opinion, so I was like, yeah, that's I can see why you're thinking that way. I mean, he's just so big everywhere. And, you know, you play at Alabama, you're playing in the SEC, you're playing against the good ones. And, I mean, you're always going to find a game or a series or a half in a game where it's like, ew, what's that all about? Well, I mean, that's one microcosm of a brilliant career. Everybody has bad series of bad games or bad whatever, unless you're like Anthony Munoz or somebody like that, who I don't even think lost a rep in practice, never mind a game. But, you know, I think that Mims is another one. I think if Latham's gone, I'd be okay with Mims. And people are like, hey, he's only played, you know, started eight games. He's got only 800 snaps under his belt. Look at Munoz. I keep looking back to that. If he's got traits, and I mean, if you were in a offensive lineman laboratory putting in all your ingredients, that guy would pop out of the beaker, man. Mm. I mean, he is like, he's big where you need to be big, you know, not trim, but athletic where you need to be athletic. I mean, he's a freakazoid. He really is. And I would not be disappointed if he were the 18th pick for the Bengals. I do think that this draft, if they can address offensive tackle, wide receiver, nose tackle, interior defensive tackle, zero technique, one technique, good guy, and if he can pass rush, that's a plus. And corner, they can address those four positions, Dan, in the first three rounds where they have four picks. If they put the nail on the head on those four, the rest is gravy. I'm like, okay, the rest of the 10 picks, utilize them to make sure you move up to get who you really want. If the guy's there and he's only like two or three picks away, don't roll the dice. You know, go ahead and use some of them. Keep a seventh round pick though for I don't know, a special teams guy or a guy that, boy, is he sliding? I can't believe that. I definitely want to pursue him as a college free agent. But there's going to be a bunch of other people that's going to get a lot of money. Have a seventh round pick to grab a guy like that. You know, but I don't think get rid of all those late picks. But if you need to move up in the second or third round, with that, they put themselves in good shape with what they did in free agency. And, you know, they're like we talked about, 18th, they're going to have good players available to them. But if their board dictates, oh, boy, I would like to move up a couple of three spots here, to have the flexibility and the ammunition to do that, you know, I think is a good thing. I think they're going to come out with four really good players in the top 100 that they've got those draft picks. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, that the rest of the draft is a waste. It's gravy. It's gravy in my mind. Then you double down. You know, okay, another offensive lineman, another wide receiver. I mean, you look at the wide receiver position, accumulation of you know, draft potentials and so forth. There's 40 or more players draftable. 40 or more players at cornerback draftable. Makes sense. That's the position. That's the National Football League. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a need, but there's an abundance to address the need at wide receiver and corner. And, you know, it's not the least bit surprising. At the offensive tackle position, I mean, heck, there are 26 offensive tackles potentially draftable, you know. But when you look at where these draft picks fall, like with the offensive tackles, we're talking about first rounders. There's not a good number of guys again until the fourth round and then in the seventh round. You know, what do you think? Okay, defensive tackle. There's one or two guys. I think in the defensive tackle position, there are going to be more drafted in this draft than there have been in prior drafts in terms of number, but not top end. But, you know, a guy or two maybe in the first round. But in the seventh round, you're going to have a half a dozen or more. In the second round, where the Bengals might target, there's going to be a half a dozen or more. You know, it's like I think this draft could potentially, you know, sift out in a pretty decent form for the Cincinnati Bengals. I do think they address the offensive positions first. If push comes to shove, it's more of an offensive draft to me than a defensive draft. But you know, a lot of people say, well, if that's the case, you know, wait longer and address your offense. Take the better defensive player available, and I wouldn't mind that either. But I think there's more depth in the offensive tackle and wide receiver position than there is in the interior defensive tackle and cornerback position, although they're pretty deep at corner as well.
Let me circle back to offensive line for a second. You locked in on Latham and Mims, who again on the consensus board were the fifth and sixth offensive linemen. Let me talk about offensive lineman number four, Troy Fa'utanu from Washington.
Yeah.
He's not one of the behemoths that you talked about earlier. He's right. Not 6'6". He's not 330. He's a little smaller. Some people project him as a guard, but everybody seems to think that he's destined for success somewhere on the offensive line. What do you think of Fa'utanu?
I like him, Dan, because of the reasons you're talking about. I think he could play center too. I think he'd be a good center. I think he can play all five. He's in my mind one of those guys, and you know, I prided myself on knowing what was going on at all five position groups. He's one of those guys that I think an offensive line coach would say, look, you know, maybe not necessarily his rookie year. They may just zero in on a position groups, but maybe into his, once he's comfortable and into his rookie year, maybe in the first few games, look, I want you to really start to broaden your horizon here in terms of, you know, when you're pulling, know what's happening. Is the center reaching, the tackle blocking? Now, what's going on? Because I want you to be able to be a guy that I can plug and play potentially anywhere in the offensive line. And, you know, there's value to that. I know that helped me play the length of time I played in the National Football League. As the old saying goes, the more you can do, you know, it's mm-hmm. going to help you. And I think he's got that type of athletic ability and mentality to be able to do that.
On the consensus board, the top two defensive tackles are Byron Murphy of Texas and Johnny Newton of Illinois. Neither is a DJ Reader type. These are not nose tackles. These are roughly 6 feet tall, 300-pound, penetrating, three-technique type guys. Do you have a preference between Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton?
I like them both, but Murphy to me is he's a little bit more freakish, you know? I mean, the things that he can do, when you look at him, he doesn't look to be that big until you really start to digest him, and then you realize that he is really that big. But both of their get-offs are extraordinary. And, you know, I know, like, from my rookie experience going against Mike Reed, that he wasn't the biggest guy he wasn't the biggest cat in the zoo, but man, explosive, you know, suddenness. It's like, oh, geez, he's on you so quickly and packs a punch because of that. You know, both of those guys, you know, remind me of that type of player. I think they're both going to have success in the National Football League. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm not sure, you know, that the Bengals, if they slide to 18, I think they have to be talked about, one of them. I mean, if it happens. And like you said, Dan, you don't know. I mean, the quarterback position, as is always the case, is the most important position in the league. They're involved with every snap, making the decisions on every snap. So, you know, they're gonna move up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might have a guy that's the 20th best player as you're rating players, but because he's a quarterback, he could still go in the top 10 or even higher, you know. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. And I think there are other positions in this throwing era of the National Football League. You know, I do think edge rushers, cornerbacks, wide receivers, offensive tackles, their importance has all jumped up as a result as well. I mean, I think guys climb the board for that reason as well. So besides the quarterback position, which will naturally, you know, the cream will rise to the top, and not necessarily really good cream, you know, cream that's almost turning bad still goes to the top. But how many of the other positions we're talking about, how many of those guys are, boy, there's the run. I got to be part of that run. I can't miss out on the top end of this deep position group. There's depth, but boy, there's a little drop off there to, you know, from this group to this group. So it'll all depend on when the runs happen and how they happen. I do think that no matter what, I mean, if they go offensive tackle, if they go wide receiver, if they go corner, they're going to get a good player. I do think it would have to be one of these two defensive tackles to slide to 18 for them to consider, mm-hmm. you know, that position group. You know, Sweat might have been before he had his – now he's sweating it out because he's, you know, made that mistake, that off-the-field mistake that could cost him a good bit of cash. That one will be interesting. If he falls to 18 in the second round, what do they do? I mean, you got to scratch a little bit on that, but I think they address things in a different way potentially. But that he unfortunately made a bad mistake. Sure. Not only a bad mistake, but a bad mistake at the wrong time in his life.
I'm with you, by the way. Murphy over Newton by a smidge.
Yeah.
Love them both.
Yep.
But Newton had the broken foot, so that, you know, didn't allow him to test going into this draft. Murphy was on that Bruce Feldman freak list that comes out every year before the college football season, where he was one of the top 100 freaks in the country last year. Number 18 on the list, ran a 4.87 40 at 300 pounds.
It's amazing. I mean, that explosiveness is just unbelievable. I bet I haven't really seen broken down his 10-yard time or his five, even if I don't even think they measure the 5-yard, but in my mind, 5-yard area for a guy like that is, I think he's maybe amongst the quickest there is in the country at any position. He is just so, his get off is so explosive.
All right, the obligatory Brock Bowers discussion now. If you remove the quarterbacks, he is one of the top 10 players on everybody's big board. So in order for him to be there for the Bengals, at least 5 quarterbacks would probably need to be taken before the 18th pick. If he's there with Mike Gesicki, Tanner Hudson, and Drew Sample on the current roster, would you draft Brock Bowers?
Boy, I'd have to give it strong consideration. I think he's one of those guys, Dan, that in my mind, he's not just a tight end. He's a slot receiver and a big one that can run. I mean, he runs 4.4-ish at 230-plus pounds. They would give him those jet sweeps, and he'd run away from guys in the SEC, you know? And I'm like, wow, he's a very, very unique weapon. Sometimes guys with that kind of speed, when they run their routes, I thought he was fast. It doesn't show up in the route running. He's a guy that his speed shows up running routes. He doesn't slow down, in other words, to make his cuts, to sink his hips, get in and out of his cuts and all that sort of thing. He is a weapon. And I think that whoever gets him, he's getting an extremely special player. I would definitely have to think about that long and hard if Brock Bowers is there at 18. I think he just, to me, it's you're addressing your wide receiver position and you're addressing depth in your tight end position. You know, I mean, you're addressing depth in both of those areas with one fell swoop. I think he's that kind of guy that can provide that type of, tool for a pawn on the chessboard for the coaching staff and Joe Burrow and everybody to take advantage of.
So as an avid listener to the In the Trenches podcast with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics, I listened to your recent conversation with Solomon Wilcots.
Right.
He made an incredible point that I had never considered about Brock Bowers. Don't think of him as a tight end.
Yep.
Just think of him as receiving weapon number two.
Yep.
There are 16 NFL wide receivers who are set to make more than $20 million a year this year, including T. Higgins. The highest paid tight end in the NFL makes $17 million a year. So if your top tight ends are paid less than your top wide receivers, you can get Bowers, get 1,000 yards of production, theoretically, if you use them right every year, at a cheaper price, especially when you get to that second contract. It makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. I mean, the second contract is where you kill it, you know? Because, like I said, tight end Travis Kelce, 17, you know, he's the guy. Hall of Famer, 17 mil. It's just that position group has not caught up with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have defensive tackles in the NFL making over $20 million a year. You have a lot of position groups making over $20 million a year. So to get him on a rookie contract at that value, and then even into the second contract, where hopefully now he's been around for a 5-year deal, now it's like, has he made a Pro Bowl, or is he on the doorstep of a Pro Bowl? You're still going to be able to get him for less than these $30 million a year contracts mm-hmm. for these wide receivers, you know, and that in my mind is a huge reason, to consider that guy. There's the economics of the weapon that he provides, plus the economics that it will cost you. I mean, that's a pretty good case to consider him very, very seriously.
All right, let's talk about the potential of a trade in the first round. If there was somebody like Bowers or one of the offensive linemen was a few spots ahead of them, if you look at one of those draft trade charts, in order to move up 3 or 4 spots in the first round, they would probably have to give up their extra third-round pick. They've got 2. The second one is 97 overall. Would you do that to move up a few spots if there was someone you really like, considering that there are going to be plenty of players you like at number 18?
Right. I mean, you'd have to consider Bowers is, you know, uniquely special. If he's still there after 15, and you're like, you know, if he's there at 15, like you said, you move up three spots and give up third-round pick to do it. I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road. I mean, that's a big decision because you're going to get a good football player at one of those four positions that we're talking about, mm-hmm. offensive tackle, wide receiver, you know, nose tackle or corner. So let's put it this way. In the last 25 years, the Bengals haven't moved up in the first round. They've moved back twice since 2010, but haven't moved up at all. Now, again, they've been pretty high in the draft anyway. And the reason to move up and moving up from when they were good, moving up from the back end is difficult, you know, to move up to in near the top 10. So at 18, it's costly, but it's not as costly as it would be, you know, other years.
Yeah.
So that is, I mean, all of that, you can throw all that into a computer that you want to. But you have to have – it's a gut. It's a gut feel. Mm-hmm. It's a gut check. What do you – what's the comp to this guy? Is there a comp to this guy? Does this guy provide such a unique weapon opportunity that, you know, gosh, he really doesn't have a comp. His comp might be, you know, an all-pro receiver and an all-pro tight end, you know, put them together, and you got the comp to Brock Bowers. You know, it's like, wow, what – I mean, who is this guy's comp? And while I'm thinking about that – Bill Tobin came to mind. You know, I mean, he was great at doing this type of thing. He had a great gut for this type of a great feel. I mean, Mike Brown said many times, whenever Bill Tobin spoke about a player, that was, you know, the voice of God in terms of football evaluation. And the Bengals in the National Football League recently lost a heck of a man, as fine a man as I ever met, Dan. And his son Duke could cut from the same cloth. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Tobin family has been good to us, and they've been good to the National Football League. And so I think about Bill Tobin around this time of year, every year. And then this year, sad situation, we lost a great one there. But those kind of guys like a Bill Tobin with that type of, you know, that type of confidence in what he's seeing and being able to make a decision based on his gut, and not every one of them is going to be right. That's the thing. You hate to make a mistake, and if it costs you a top 100 pick, it's a costly mistake. So you definitely have to feel, you know, not just like 60% right. You have to be up there.
Yeah,
it has to be an extremely high percentage. You have to feel like, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm doing this, man. I'm on this. This is a no-brainer to me. You know, other people may rip it apart, and there's always going to be somebody, just for the sake of being contrarian, there's going to be people out there that are going to take the other side and bash you to death or whatever. But you have to have confidence in your eyes and your football acumen and make a call.
Which is why I will give a flat-out no to giving up that third-round pick to move up a few spots. I don't think it's worth it. The draft is always a crapshoot. Injuries happen. You never know what's going to happen. Guys that you think are a sure thing often aren't sure things. I'd go back a few spots to get an extra third-round pick. I would not go up. The one exception would be for a quarterback. If I was in a situation where I desperately needed a quarterback and the class was good and I felt like I've got a really good chance that this guy's going to be my quarterback, then I'd do it. For virtually any other position, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And the Bengals, obviously, haven't moved up in the first round for 25 years. That's their thought process. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be something that is so incredibly, you know, obvious to everybody that it has to happen. But Brock Bowers is probably, you know, a guy that you might, because let's face it, in the 25 years, there have been a litany of opportunities for them to move up. I mean, people are, you know, testing the waters all day, every day. With every team in the National Football League for trades, some more than others, but there's obviously been times where, you know, the Bengals have been afforded an opportunity and decided not to do it. I agree. I do think when you're in the top 100, that's good draft capital, mm-hmm. and you don't waste it.
Right.
You don't waste it.
Yeah. I start considering moving up when the cost is fourth round or later.
Right.
I'm not giving up a third or obviously a first or second.
I agree. I mean, day one, day two, draft picks are you know, and you'll see there's always going to be examples of, oh, well, you know, so-and-so was a seventh, so-and-so was a sixth. But you're talking about a small number in the big stratosphere, the big universe of the National Football League. You're always going to find somebody that is, you know, different than the norm, but you're not going to find a whole bunch of them. I think being prudent and judicious with those over the long haul, there's always going to be somebody there that is going to give you value at that pick. You know, it's like, if you have a roster that's incredible and you, you want to give up a third round pick because you only have like one need to fill and you want to address it in the second and third round, you want to move up in the third round to address this one need. I'm talking about like the odds of this happening is one in I don't know how many gazillion. I think it's very, very rare that I would consider doing that.
Just because Tom Brady was the 199th pick in the draft, it does not mean that all picks number 199 are great.
Yep.
According to the various big boards, there's a good chance that the third or fourth best cornerback will be there. Nate Wiggins of Clemson, Cooper DeJean or DeJean of Iowa. The fourth, fifth, or sixth wide receiver could be there. Brian Thomas from LSU, Ladd McConkey of Georgia, A.D. Mitchell from Texas. Is it a long shot to think that pick number 18 is going to be one of those guys?
I don't think it's a long shot. I think those guys are that's why I think this draft is so unique. It's like, I think when the Bengals get to 18, there's going to be maybe four options. There's going to be an option in each one of those positions. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, we spent all this time stacking our board. And you know what? No board in the NFL is identical on a team-by-team basis. Why? Because every board there is need involved. I don't give a damn what they say. I don't stack my board based on bull crap, mama. I mean, there's definite need. I mean, some teams have that need a quarterback. Some teams have quarterbacks stacked much differently on their board than teams that don't. I mean, let's face it. Not everybody's going to have five quarterbacks going in the top half of the first round potentially. They're going to say, I'm going to go by my real true evaluation of this quarterback position. And this guy is not even a top 15 guy on the big board. I'm not going to put him in the top five. But teams that it's based on need. That's just the nature of the beast. So there are going to be, again, depending on when the runs happen at these positions, it's you think, you know, people might say, you mean to tell me that the sixth offensive tackle is better than the second defensive tackle at number 18? Are you kidding? No, I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. I mean, based on the tape, that's what I'm saying. You know, it might not be a huge difference in the sixth offensive tackle, the fourth corner, you know, whatever the case may be. They may all be there, and I may have them on my board like bang, bang, bang. They're all right there. They're all in the same little cluster, the same little clump. So now you have to go to whatever's going to be the differentiator. Man, high character guy. This guy, I mean, everybody I talk to has nothing negative to say about this guy. This guy has a little fly in the ointment with this. I mean, now you're talking about, you know, nitpicking, and that's what it might come down to.
So we've been focused on pick number 18. The Bengals also have number 49. That's their second round pick. They've got two picks in the third, 80 and 97. So four out of the top 100. Do you have some favorites, some guys you like after round one?
You know, I haven't really kind of zeroed in. Honestly, if for whatever reason the Bengals don't take a tackle at 18, and I don't think this guy is going to fall to the middle of the second round, but a guy that might be in the second round, they might think about moving up for, Patrick Paul out of Houston. Mm-hmm.
He could be there with their second round pick.
He could.
Yeah.
And they may have to move up a little bit for him. I mean, if they don't go tackle in the first round, that's a guy in the second round that you know, that I would think, yeah, you know, that could make some sense. Javon Baker out of Central Florida,
as wide receiver.
Yeah, wide receiver, possibly, you know, in the third round. For defensive line, interior defensive lineman in the second round. If I like Fisk a lot, I like Jenkins out of Michigan. I like Fisk out of Florida State. You know, those couple of guys potentially in the second round for an interior defensive tackle. In the third round, Smith out of LSU, McKinley Jackson out of Texas A&M. Those guys potentially, you know, as third round guys. Those are guys that I've thought about, you know, maybe a little bit. I don't know. I've focused most of my attention, as you can tell, on the interior offensive and defensive line. A guy that I really like a lot is Darius Robinson out of Missouri, edge guy. And that's not a huge. I mean, that's the Bengals are in good shape, but you can always use another edge guy. The thing is, you know, when you look at it, I mean, edge rushers, the seventh round, there could be 10 to 12 guys still available off the edge in the seventh round because it's such a plentiful position because of the way the national in college football and the National Football League, you know, structures itself now. You know, I mean, you might be able to get a good edge guy in the third or fourth round. There could be 10 guys available in that third and fourth round, you know, for an edge guy. So that I'm saying this draft, I think, is so deep. I think they're going to be with. There are what, two or three teams, Dan, that have 11 picks, and the Bengals have 10. They're amongst, you know, the league leaders with having that draft capital going into this particular draft as well fortified as it is. I think it's a good thing.
I wrote down some names for guys I like after round one, and you named two of them. Chris Jenkins from Michigan, a.k.a. the Mutant.
Yes.
His dad was a four-time Pro Bowler. His dad was 60 pounds heavier, but Chris Jenkins, the defensive tackle, is about 300 pounds. I also like Mason Smith from LSU. There aren't a lot of tall defensive linemen in this group.
Right.
He's 6'5", 306, coming off an ACL from a couple of years ago, but I think he might be there with their first third-round pick. I also like Mike Hall from Ohio State, 20 years old, ran a 4.75 40 at 299 pounds, was excellent in the Senior Bowl, and we know that the Bengals have liked Ohio State players, so that might be a name to keep an eye on.
What about a corner, Dan? I have a guy in the third round, Max Melton out of Rutgers, potentially, as a third round.
There he is on my sheet.
Do you really? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a guy that I've kind of said, hey, if he's available. I mean, the fourth round, again, there's – I mean, third, fourth, fourth, fifth, and sixth round corners, we're looking at like – you know, a dozen and a half guys available, 18 to 20 guys that you can choose from at some point in time in those three rounds. So in my mind, that might be a good targeting point for the cornerback position.
Yeah, I had Max Melton down, ran a 4.39 40, blocked several punts at Rutgers. Number 63 on the Dane Brugler board, so might he be there at 80? Maybe.
Could be.
My favorite non-first-round pick in this draft is cornerback Mikey Sainra still of Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Mike Hilton 2.0. He's undersized, 5'9", 182 pounds, but a two-time captain, six picks last year, two pick sixes. Every time I turned on the TV and watched Michigan last year, he was making big plays. Might he be there at 49 in the second round? Yeah, maybe. And I don't know if the Bengals would pull the trigger, but I love Mikey Sainra still.
Yeah, I mean, I've got him in the second round. TJ Tampa, Lassiter, I like, but I think they'll probably be gone by 18. But I do out of Michigan, Sam still the same type of thought process as you. Then Melton in the third round. So, and I didn't go as far as the fourth round in terms of the corner spot. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's if we're thinking this, you got to figure a lot of teams in the NFL are thinking it too. And that's the thing. You get to a certain spot, and there's this cluster of corners. There's this cluster of receivers. There's this I mean, it's like it's not just a guy from each position group. It's multiple guys from each position group that may be worthy, particularly, like you say, we're thinking, oh, would he be available? If they're sliding, gosh, man. And that's the thing. You look at when the quarterbacks get pushed up in the draft, overvalued like they are, there's a trickle-down effect that takes a few rounds before it kind of readjusts itself. So, you know, some guys potentially could be affected by that. And you might, there may be guys available. It's like, damn, I never thought that dude would be here at this spot. But it's a, you know, or it's a trickle up or trickle down, whatever you want to say. It's an adjustment of where these guys were pictured by the mock people and probably player personnel department guys going into the draft until the actual pick of how many quarterbacks are going to – how many teams are going to get suckered by quarterbacks, how many teams are going to make a run at wide receiver, make a run at offensive tackle, whatever the case may be.
More with Lapp in a moment, but first, a quick reminder that the Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By Alta Fiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. I wrote down a few wide receivers as well for after the first round. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. His nickname was the Yak King. He's been compared to Debo Samuel. Did not run a good 40 time at the combine, but was incredibly productive with the ball in his hands last year.
Yep.
Troy Franklin from Oregon. He is a field stretcher, tremendous speed. Devontae Walker from North Carolina, just like that as well, 4.36 in the 40s. So those are a few of the guys that I'm thinking might be a possibility for a second or third round wide receiver.
I had Ricky Prohl. Pearsall, I should say, from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I had Leggett. I think he's talked about, I mean, he's a riser. It seems like I had him as a third-round potential. I mean, he might go somewhere in the second round, but, you know, and I mentioned Baker. Jalen Polk from Washington, potential fourth-round mm-hmm. guy, is somebody that, you know, thought had some potential. So there are going to be really – good football players. And the thing is, Dan, the secret sauce of having a successful personnel department is this guy, man, and the offense that he got stuck in, and there's less of that in the NIL now. They get the heck out of there. And the NIL is an interesting dynamic. I mean, to me, it's like, has it made it harder or easier for personnel people to evaluate? Because there's a lot of the guys that would have gone in the seventh round, their college teams are saying, we'll make it worth your while. Don't go out in the draft and go in the sixth or something. We'll give you more money than you'd make. You know. And when you look at it, they get that kind of net money. They don't have to pay for housing. They don't have to pay for food. You know, an alum might be giving them a car. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's the gross is the net. There's no expenses. So competing, the NIL, I think, makes it kind of clears some of the waters a little bit on the back end, the late end. But, and I think it also, it's like, man, this poor kid, he got stuck in this system. Or, you know, no, NIL says, I'm out, bro. You're not using me. I'm better than this. You guys, I can't stay here. You guys lied to me. You're not using me the way. Or sometimes just a personality issue. He and the assistant coach or the coordinator or the head coach just don't hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
NIL, get the hell out. You know, so there's less of that. That to me was one of the hardest things for personnel departments to evaluate. This guy just got dealt a bad hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now with the NIL, you can discard and get three more, you know,
right.
and try to improve your hand.
NIL and the ability to transfer without sitting out a year. Take Charlie Jones in his final year. He said, I'm going to go where there's a quarterback that can get me the ball and I can put up some wide receiver stats.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that from that standpoint, I think that's a big burden that has been somewhat lifted from player personnel. People is like, boy, his measurables and his tangibles, it just wasn't a right fit. In my mind, the thing that you still have to really be clever at and have a lot of contacts is the intangibles. Is the dude a turd? I mean, does the dude want to compete? Is he like an Uber competitor? Is he this? Is he that? So I think the Bengals, having as many guys as they've had stay together for as long as they have, they've finished each other's sentences, you know? And now being with one organization all those years, the contacts they've made out in the college football world for a number of years, I mean, there's a lot of trust there back and forth to evaluate whether a guy, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down.
You have just given me the greatest idea of all time. Just as captains wear a C on their jersey, I think guys who are known as turds should be forced to wear a T.
Classic. I'll tell you, man. I'm still trying to figure out the best way to spell it. T-U-R-D or T-E-R-D?
I'm a T-U-R-D speller. All right. We have reached the moment of truth. It is prediction time. With the 18th pick of the 2024 NFL Draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select.
I'm going by what I'd like to see happen.
Okay.
And I think Orlando and Brown and I are in the same boat. I'd like to see J.C. Latham. I mean, will he be there? Who the hell knows? I mean, if he's not, I wouldn't, as a former offensive lineman, I wouldn't be upset if they took Mims. It wouldn't hurt me at all. I think a lot of people might say, oh, that's a little bit too rich, you know, potentially. But I see he's got, some guys have, you know, a high floor and a low ceiling, or a high ceiling, low floor. He's got a high floor and a high ceiling. I mean, he's got a lot. But if the Bengals were able to select J.C. Latham with that 18th pick, I'd be a happy camper. Anybody want to join me at camp?
Frank Pollock would like to join you at
yes,
that camp.
Yes.
So I've done three-round mock drafts on this podcast right. over the last few weeks. Twice my first-round pick was Troy Fautanu. The other time it was J.C. Latham when he was there. If either of those guys is there, that's my pick. But I don't think either one is going to be there. Yep. I just have a hunch there's going to be a run, and my options are going to be as follows. Best offensive line available, Mims.
Yep.
Best defensive lineman available, Murphy. Some other guys as well that are interesting, wide receivers, corners, etc. But because I'm fearing that the top five offensive linemen on the consensus board are going to be gone, I will predict Byron Murphy, yeah. who I have not taken up until this point, but as of today, that is my prediction.
Yeah, and that could very well pan out that way. And it's like I said before, it's like, okay, you mean to tell me the sixth rated offensive tackle in most people's opinion is better than the number one defensive tackle? No, I'm not saying that necessarily. And I'm speaking as a former offensive lineman here, but I mean, I do think I could see, you know, would I have a problem if there were five offensive tackles taken, Latham was one of those. I would not have an issue if they took Murphy over Mims whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have an issue if they took Mims over Murphy. I do think they need to address some way the offensive or defensive line, the line of scrimmage with that 18th pick, though. I do believe that. And I mean, if there's an edge guy that slides, shoot, I'm count me in. I'm good with that as well, you know. But I don't think at 18 I would go with an interior offensive lineman over the interior defensive lineman. I wouldn't do that. If the cornerback slides, I mean, one of the top four corners for whatever reason would be there. You just don't know. But I agree with you as far as the line of scrimmage is concerned. I just hope the big boy out of Alabama's there. The other reason is we must be cousins. We only have one letter different in our name. Got to be distant cousins somehow. I mean, take out the T, put in a P.
Your name has been mispronounced, Latham, over the years.
No question. I mean, my football coach, and man, you know very well, Ben Schwartzwalder, called me Latham for 4 years. And my freshman year was because, you know, he didn't know how to pronounce it, but it got to be a joke. And I was his captain, for crying out loud, and he called me Latham when I was sitting across, and he'd smile, you know, hey, Latham, what? So, yeah, I mean, Latham, close. I'll change the way I pronounce my name if we draft him.
Well, let me say, if they do wind up taking Mims, I've got no problem with that. Like yeah. you said, he is the offensive tackle built in a lab.
Yeah.
He has 8-time Pro Bowl potential, and if that's the way the Bengals go, I'm ready to embrace Amarius Mims.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the thing that I admire about Murphy is, for his size, you'd think, and the explosiveness, you'd think that, you know, really good push and pass. He plays the run, man. I mean, his pad level, it's almost like he takes a knee on some reps. He's on one knee to get under people. And that's an explosive guy to be able to do that. And that's a an athletically and physically gifted dude to do some of the stuff he does on tape. There's no question about it.
All right. We hadn't done a podcast in a while, so I pointed the lap signal into the Cincinnati sky and got several Ask Lap questions. We've covered some of them already, but here are a few that we have not hit on. This is from our friend Strawberry Ice.
Oh, baby.
If Johnny Newton drops to the second round due to his foot issue, would the Bengals trade up to get him? So that was the question. Now, I did a little extra homework to try to put it in better perspective. To move up five spots, it would probably cost them a fourth round pick. To move up 10 spots, it would probably cost them their second third round pick. To move up to the top of the second round, it would probably cost them their first third round pick. Would you make any of those deals in hopes of getting Johnny Newton?
The only one I'd make, Dan, is the fourth round pick for the reasons we talked about earlier. I really value, you know, those top 100 picks. I mean, you're going to get good football players with those top 100 picks. And he is a really good football player. But I'd gladly give up a fourth round pick to move up a handful of spots to get him. But I'm not sure I'd mortgage much more.
From TJ Hushmanzada's shiny shoes. If the Bengals don't select an offensive lineman in round one, how late can they wait to get the right tackle of the future?
Boy, that's a really good question. And, you know, I mean, the Frank Pollock in the scouting department would be much more qualified to answer that question than me. But, I mean, if they wait to the fourth round, I wouldn't wait any longer than that. I can tell you that. I mean, second round, there's not many projected to go in the second round. Not many projected to go in the third, but the next round where there's a cluster of offensive tackles to go is the fourth round. Based on that, geez, I don't know. I feel like they have to spend one of the top 100 picks on that offensive tackle. I don't think they can wait to go to the next run, potentially, of offensive tackles into the fourth round.
Here's a question from Mon. What do you think of offensive lineman Graham Barton out of Duke? Could he be in play at number 18?
We talked about versatility. I think he's a guy. His dad played in the NFL for a good number of years as well. And, you know, he's got position versatility. He can play, in my mind, all five positions as well. I think, you know, he would initially be projected to be a guard, but I do think he could go out and play tackle if necessary. And he could definitely line up. And he's a very intelligent guy. Went to Duke. I think he could, you know, handle the center position very readily. I mean, if he's there, we're talking 18. We're not talking. I would not put him in the 18 category. My discussion would be, you know, if he's there for some reason in the second round, hell yeah. Even if I took a tackle in the first round, if Barton's there in the second round, he's definitely in the conversation.
From Jesse, if Amarius Mims is the pick, could he play guard until he's needed at right tackle?
I think he could. I think he could. And, man, when you look at that, 6'8", 6'7", plus, you know, the shorty at 6'4", Karras at center. You know, well, Cap is 6'6", 6'6". I'm saying if he had to go inside at either guard, you know, the two starters are between 6'6", and 6'7". Mims is between 6'7", and 7'8", and 6'8". I mean, this offensive line is the biggest offensive line in captivity before they make this draft selection. When they take this guy, it's going to be, you better buy tickets because it's like viewing at the zoo, you know. You're going to the biggest group in captivity. I mean, it is going to be the Great Wall of China. And the thing is, four of the five offensive linemen have been on Super Bowl championship teams, projected starters. You got big, powerful, strong, athletic enough offensive linemen. Man, Achevitz. It's, you know, it's almost like you look at what they've already got, what they did in free agency with the guys we're talking about. I mean, the starters, projected starters, with the four Super Bowl championships and all the size they've already got, it's like, come on, Frank, don't be selfish. You don't need that 18th pick. I'm sure the other position coaches are, come on, Frank, how much do you need, bro? So, I mean, but what a room that'll be. I think they can sell tickets to when we land at visiting airports. When they get off the plane, have them all get off single file as a group and have everybody pay to observe them getting off, you know.
From Bengals and Brews, Let's give the interior defense or offensive linemen some love. Who are a couple of your favorites among the interior offensive linemen and why?
Well, I know people think the kid from Oregon, you know, Johnson Jackson will be able to, he'll be a first round, maybe late first round pick. And he'll be gone in the second round. Graham Barton, like I talked about earlier, from Duke, I think he's somebody that you need to take a look at. Zach Frazier from West Virginia, I think he's a scrapper man.
Mm-hmm.
He'll fight you.
Wrestling champ.
Oh yeah, he'll fight you till the end. He'll fight you and bite you until the end. You know, there are eight to ten guys really in round three. Round four, there's 7 to 8. Round five, there's another 7. Round six, from round three to round six, we're looking at 25 to 30 draftable players. So in my mind, that's the sweet spot where you go after, you know, maybe an interior offensive lineman. So I wouldn't do it with one of the top 100 picks. But after that, open market, open game.
A question from Sean. Will they target a slot receiver to replace Tyler Boyd or a receiver with more position flexibility? And in what round will they draft their first wide receiver?
You know, I think the way the Bengals work with their receiver group is everybody needs to know every assignment. We know, Dan, they pride themselves on being interchangeable drill bits in the drill. You know, Tyler Boyd could play outside as well as slot, but he was primarily a slot receiver. You know, Jamar Chase will go in the slot, and he's outstanding. He's outstanding out on the edge. So I think they'll be looking for a guy that can do that, that can line up anywhere and not have a problem. So that requires a certain amount of skill set, but also what's upstairs? How much can he assimilate? You know, is he a guy that is going to be limited? Boy, with this guy, you got to plug him at X and keep him at X, split in. You know, forget about slot flanker, forget about slot. So I think, you know, that part of it is going to be a big part of the evaluation process of the wide receivers for the Bengals.
And when will they take their first? I would say second or third.
Right.
I don't see them going to day three without a wide receiver.
Agreed. I in my mind, if with those first four picks, the top 100 picks, offensive tackle, defensive tackle, wide receiver, corner. If they can get, in my mind, done deal, gravy. Rest of the draft is gravy, and maybe we'll just do a little manipulation to move around a little bit. But I'm, at that point, I'm just doubling down. And I'm not saying they won't draft a safety. I'm not saying they won't draft a running back. But I think that they'll say, you know what, I'm going to draft another receiver in round six, because this kid has a shot, mm-hmm. you know. But if they can get those four positions covered in day one and two, I'm good.
Question from Laszlo Flo. With a needed nose tackle, what about bringing back Tyler Shelvin? For those that don't recall, a fourth-round pick in 2021, he was part of the Super Bowl team, did play some in the playoffs that year, but got released in December the following year. So that's his second year, which is pretty unusual for a top first four-round draft pick in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and haven't heard Tyler Shelvin's name around the league, mm-hmm. you know, anywhere else. So obviously everybody had the same, you know, the same evaluation of Tyler Shelvin that the Bengals had. So I do think it would not surprise me that if they go through the draft, and even if they go through college free agency, and they haven't found somebody that they feel like, you know, fits the bill, I think they will go back to the street and see who's out there, who still, you know, was released by a team, and for whatever reason, nobody else has picked him up yet, mm-hmm. because there's not a big market for those guys. But you know, as it starts to dwindle down to okay, now we still have a little bit of a need. And this guy's still out there, might be able to work out a little bit of a fit here. That wouldn't shock me. I mean, I think there's two areas of free agency, and the initial veteran free agency, which they did a great job, and then the draft, and then college free agency, and then there's another round of, you know, free agents that are still out there. And I think there might be a candidate that would come in and compete at training camp for that spot in that arena.
But I think we can safely say it will not be Tyler Shelvin. He was heavy at LSU. He had weight issues in Cincinnati. He was in training camp with the Titans last year, got released at the end of camp, did not get picked up during the course of the season. I think the Tyler Shelvin NFL career has probably come and gone.
Yeah, I agree. I'd be very surprised if it's Tyler Shelvin that they bring off the street, like I said, right before, you know, between college free agency period, that signing period, and training camp. You get released in training camp, and nobody else picks you up. And now, I mean, not even practice squad. You're available to be on a practice squad. You know, it's not nobody did that. So I think you don't have to be a genius to read those tea leaves.
All right. Another epic pre-draft podcast is in the books. Lapham wants Latham.
Yes.
That is the bottom line from this podcast.
My brother from another mother.
Well, the Bengals got the 18th most valuable player in the 1974 draft when they took Lapham. Hopefully, at pick number 18, they're going to get a very valuable player this year, and it might just be Latham.
I'd be all for it. I would toast that pick.
Here's a quick reminder that I'll post new editions of this podcast after each day of the draft. You'll hear from the selections, from Bengals coaches, and I'll discuss the pick with Dave Lapham. That's going to do it for this episode, brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By Alta Fiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.